We are stepping away from the day's headlines today, like say Pegasus or say Afghanistan, and looking at something else. Why? Because one, besides these headlines, there are also other stories making the headlines. And just like these stories, other stories have complexities also, clutter also, which needs to be addressed. In any case, Pegasus is an ongoing story. We might revisit it in a day or two as more names come out. They will keep coming out. So we're looking at two things today. And if I may say this to you, two and a half. Half just in the passing, I will talk about a little bit of cricket, but towards the end. But just that is just because I'm so obsessed with cricket and sport, and so I know are most of you. So first of all, politics. Politics is now changing in our country, and it's a fascinating change. It's a fascinating change whereby, I'm making a statement now, I will explain it a bit later. It looks like BJP is going through a process of Congressization or Congressification, and Congress under Rahul and Priyanka is going through a process of BJPization. So you might say, Shekhar Gupta, go get your head examined. Maybe I need to, but maybe you will be convinced by what I'm saying once I give you the reasons, because that is where the most fascinating and the cluttered part of our politics lies right now. So look at what has happened in Punjab. Now, there's an article by D.K. Singh, our political editor, published on the print today. You should read that. I will share it with you. He's one of the most astute watchers of politics in the country. And you read his column and you watch his video as well on politics. Now, he says that don't look at what has happened in Punjab in terms of Sidhu versus Amrinder Singh. Don't think about who's won and who's lost. This is more a comment on the Gandhis, on the new generation of Gandhis, that is Rahul and Priyanka. Because what has happened in this case? You see a clear departure from Sonia Gandhi's method. Sonia Gandhi was always conciliatory whenever she had these troubles in the region, and usually, more often than not, she leaned towards a tried and tested, the familiar figure, the older person. And that was also helped along by the fact that Ahmed Patel was around. Ahmed Patel kept it all together. He made sure that the old loyalists, the veterans in the party, were respected. They were not sidelined. They were given a lot of deference as well. Rahul and Priyanka are now clearly demonstrating that they don't particularly have it. They are not particularly weighed down by those legacy issues. They are willing to deal with people of that generation in a manner that they deem fit, which means that they have now undertaken a kind of creative destruction in the Congress party. So there is a risk in what is happening in Punjab. They know that there is anti-incumbency under Amrinder Singh. Yet at the same time, opposition is in a disarray. Nobody looks like in a position to be able to win in Punjab. So Congress is still ahead. So if they do have a change in leadership, and if change in leadership of the party, not the chief ministership, and Amrinder Singh accepts it and he and Sidhu fight together, that will be good for the Congress, rather than having Sidhu go to the Aam Aadmi Party, etc., or just having a mess or a split in the party. If Amrinder Singh, on the other hand, does not accept it, he splits the party, he goes away with his own people, then there will be a risk that Congress may lose a state that they were more than likely to win. Now, that is a risk that Rahul and Priyanka are now willing to take, because they want a generational shift in the party. Now, this is a signal. This is a signal, say, to Ashok Gehlot in Rajasthan, that was what has happened to Amrinder Singh may happen to you, because Rahul and Priyanka are looking at politics going ahead now. So Ashok Gehlot, at some point, he might have to yield to Sachin Pilot, because that also seems to have been a commitment that Rahul and Priyanka made to him when he was rebelling the last time. Now, important thing is that people who are giving these favors to are also people who are not nobodies, who also have a following, who can win their elections. Sidhu as well as Sachin Pilot. So for Ashok Gehlot, it's a warning. He should read the writing on the wall. And being an astute senior politician, I know that he must be doing it. Then similarly, there is a crisis right now in Karnataka Congress. So Siddaramaiah, D.K. Shivkumar are both talking to the High Command. High Command now is Rahul and Priyanka. again they are talking. Siddaramaiah is only 72 yet, not yet 73. He's quite fit. Captain Amrinder Singh is 79. So that puts a little, puts him in a little disadvantage going ahead. So Siddaramaiah also is somebody who's Dharti se juda hua politician, who is somebody with his ear to the ground. He has a following. He's a particular caste, an OBC. So he has a lot of that vote bank. So he will not be so easy to push around. But it would seem that the young Gandhis might be more inclined to go with D.K. Shivkumar, although, mind you, he was seen to be somebody close to Ahmed Patel. So this new dynamic is now playing out, and you don't know in the process, they might give us a surprise again in Karnataka, because they have given us surprises before. Look at Kerala, for example. Kerala, in fact, I once did a full Cut the Clutter episode on infighting in the Congress party in Kerala. That's gone on for 4 decades. Endless. What have they done this time? The two old warriors, they've got them out now. So Uman Chandy and Ramesh Chennithala are both out. So they have a new man there, a new leader, Satheesan. Nobody had heard of him very much. But the old guard has been turned out. So once again, you see shades of the same method. Then you have the other phenomenon. And then you will know why I say that there is a bit of a BJPization of the Congress going on. Who has been made in charge of the party in Gujarat? It is Hardik Patel. He is an outsider. He was never in the Congress. He was brought in from outside. It looks like right now he is not being given that much importance. So he is an outsider. That shows you the Congress party looked for young talent. They wanted young talent. They wanted a young talented person outside, brought him in, somehow lost interest in him. But still, the phenomenon, he is the first to establish this phenomenon of the young Gandhis looking for talent outside, not trusting whatever is available within the party. Then you see Revanth Reddy in Telangana. Who was Revanth Reddy? Revanth Reddy was in ABVP. Young fellow. He was in ABVP. From ABVP, he went to Telugu Desam Party. He's a dyed-in-the-wool old RSS loyalist. But he is now heading the party, the Congress party, in Telangana. So once again, you've dumped all the talents that might have been available with you. You've dumped all the seniors who've been with your party, because you can always say, but what have they delivered? We are losing everything in Andhra and almost everything in Telangana anyway. So let's try out a new one. So Revanth Reddy, trained by ABVP, which effectively means trained by BJP, is now heading the Congress in Telangana. In fact, you should see the interview that my colleague Rishika Sadam did with him in Hyderabad. I will share the link with you, where he says politics now is like a T20. You have to hit out or get out. So that is the new attitude of politics. And looks like the young Gandhis are impressed by that attitude. Then Maharashtra, Nana Patole, the Maharashtra Congress chief, who's always controversial and who's always drawing criticism both from NCP and from Shiv Sena. Until 2018, he was in the BJP. He came from the BJP. He's also an import. And Maharashtra is a state where Congress has so many tall leaders, but they've all been ignored. And this outsider has been brought in and he's been made the party chief once again, with BJP training. So what did I say? BJPization of the Congress party. Now you still have doubts. Where was Navjot Singh Sidhu? He joined the Congress party only in 2017 when he was a Rajya Sabha member for the BJP. He joined the BJP in 2004. He spent 13 years, 10 and 3, 13 years in the BJP. 13 years in the BJP, came to the Congress. Fourth year in the Congress, he's already the party chief in Punjab. So that is how this BJPization is going on. And that is how Rahul and Priyanka are now finding talent wherever they can find it. That's why people like Gulam Nabi Azad, Digvijay Singh, Kapil Sibal, they've all been sidelined. It's a big difference from the past. In the past, when Congress got people from outside like Narayan Rane, it did not make them chief ministers or party chiefs, etc. Made them ministers and this and that. Never rewarded them too much. But now, this is a shift. The other way in which I said BJP is getting Congressized. That is because BJP is now acquiring the high command culture, which means chief ministers are less and less powerful, less and less important. They are being appointed from Delhi. They are being supervised from Delhi. They are also, when they don't listen, they are also being pushed around, something that Yediyurappa is feeling right now. So BJP, on the other hand, has now become a high command run party. That's the reason we say that the big political trend right now in our politics is this sort of generational shift in the Congress, which is accompanied by a kind of BJPization, because they are drawing young talent from the BJP, not trusting their own. We don't know what will happen in Haryana right now, because it's quite likely that the Gandhis may also be getting impatient with the Hoodas there. And similarly, the BJP, which earlier used to take pride in having strong chief ministers, not having a very strong high command that controlled everything, is moving in that direction. That was the hallmark of the Congress party. And we haven't talked about the coronavirus situation for some time, so I think it's important now that we revisit it. I hope all of you are vaccinated at least once. If you aren't, please go get it done. Get yourself vaccinated and keep those masks on. Because even with the news that I tell you today, which is not such bad news, don't get overconfident. The news today is the new sero survey. This is the fourth sero survey conducted by the Indian Council of Medical Research. What is a sero survey? Sero survey is like an opinion poll. It's like the Pew survey that we talked about the other day on religiosity in India. It takes a small sample, not millions and crores, and that is no survey. It takes a representative sample, and there is a science to these surveys. For this survey, ICMR has taken across the country in a scientific way 28,975 people whose blood has been drawn to check if they have the COVID antibodies or not. Now, they could have COVID antibodies because they got vaccinated, or they could have antibodies because they had COVID. In fact, the ICMR has also made a separate category of those who are vaccinated and those who are not vaccinated. That's why the results that come out become even more important. Similarly, they have a separate category of 7,252 healthcare workers. You will see some of this data and some of these charts running on the screen as I talk. Now, what is the standout finding, the headline finding? The headline finding is that 67% of 6%, that is 68% of Indians, are now positive for COVID antibodies, which means 68% Indians have either had the disease or, because of their vaccination, they have these antibodies. Once again, among the unvaccinated, the percentage is 62%. Overall, the percentage is 68%. But importantly, don't get mistaken into thinking, oh, that means vaccinated are only 68% and unvaccinated 62%, so what's the benefit? That's the reason I always say, figures, data, be very careful. Don't mix percentages with absolutes. So what is 68% of the total population, that is vaccinated plus unvaccinated, is 62% for the unvaccinated? It's actually 90%, 89.8 or 89.9%, 90% for those who've had two shots of the vaccine. For heaven's sake, if there is still any vaccine skepticism left, forget it, go get yourselves vaccinated. Why do I say that we should not get complacent? You might think that if 68% Indians have this have these antibodies, that means nearly 90 crore Indians have had either COVID or they've had the vaccine. So we are all safe. Let's all go out in public. But remember, India is a large population. So as ICMR also pointed out, that even if 90 crore people have had COVID antibodies, it still means that another 45 crore or so, or maybe 48 crore or so, are still susceptible. That's a lot of people. That is 8 to 9 times the population of Britain. That is more than 1.5 times the population of all of America. So it is still a lot of people, and it's important that they are protected. So as vaccinations go up, the numbers go up, and I'm glad that over the past 2-3 days, we saw a good Saturday. an excellent Monday. I hope today's good. Sunday wasn't so good. I wish we would start doing better on Sundays also. But we've seen that since the new minister has come in, there is an uptick in the vaccine numbers. So wait for that to happen. Maybe another 2 months, when maybe another 30 crore Indians or 25 crore Indians have at least one shot in their arms, then India would be closer to true herd immunity. So once again, you are very close to success. You are not successful yet. You watch it carefully. Again, see how vaccines work. Healthcare workers, the data for healthcare workers tells you 86%, nearly 86% have COVID antibodies. And you might say, oh, how come 14%, 15% don't have it in spite of the vaccination? So I will tell you a fact that will surprise you. Frankly, it shocks me and disappoints me that even in the universe of healthcare workers for whom vaccination started first, 16 January this year, even among them, about 10% have not got themselves vaccinated. So what do you say to people like that? I would say that for healthcare workers, maybe it's necessary to have a law or have an order that makes it either mandatory for them to get vaccinated, or if they are not vaccinated, they should not be able to come for their jobs. Because if they have vaccine hesitancy, 10 out of 100 is a lot. That is a very disappointing thing. Now, there are other things that these other conclusions that this data leads to. This is till June 1. Till June 1, India had 2.8 crore confirmed cases through testing. And India is testing quite a bit now. Now, if you look at this data, the zero positivity data, this means that for every case that India caught, India was missing 30 cases. This estimate in the second zero survey in January was at about 23. So from 23, now you've come to missing 30 cases. It also tells you that the second zero survey in first week of January showed a zero positivity of 24.1%. From 24.1 to 68 now. That tells you also the severity of the second wave and the infectivity of the Delta variant. So 30 you missed for one, 2.8 crores detected. That means, and then you have people who are vaccinated. You can say 90 crore people in India, 30 times 2.8 and vaccinated. Just round it off to a convenient number. 90 crore odd people already have COVID antibodies, which is very good. But once again, as I told you, it still means 45 crore plus people don't have it. Now, there are two other standout points here. One, that people in the 45-60 age group, now a lot of them are going out to work, etc. Also, they were the ones who got vaccinated first, 45 plus. In that age group, 78% are seropositive. That means your vulnerable populations now are much better protected than before. The other finding, which I think will be very interesting and important for parents and teachers, the children have shown a high degree of seropositivity. In fact, almost as much as the adults, maybe a few percentage points lower. Children, you will see the figures on my screen. It's just a few percentage points lower than the adults. But how come you haven't seen so many children who've fallen sick? So Dr. Bhargava, the head of ICMR, he said that one, children are able to handle these infections much better. They don't get symptomatic as much as adults do. And the second thing, he gave a scientific reason. He says that children also get less sick by this virus because as children are growing up in young age, their lungs, their bodies have much fewer, their cells have much fewer ACE2 receptors. You know that coronavirus, its spikes need that ACE receptor to latch onto. So children have much fewer of those receptors. As you grow older, those receptors come in. So the logic is, the question is, should you open schools first? So the experts' logic is that yes, you should open, when you open schools, open primary schools first because younger children are safer. And second, at the same time, you cannot think of opening any school unless all the teachers and all the support staff are fully vaccinated. So that is where we stand. I would say this is reassuring news, reassuring at great cost that second wave has actually washed through a lot of our population. And we are standing at 68%, but this is not good enough because 68% leaves 48 crore Indians still vulnerable. Remember, 48% is more than 8 times of UK's population. So once again, take a deep breath, keep that mask on, and when you get a vaccine, whenever it's available, go get it, look for it. It is the most important thing that will save your life and maybe your neighbors, your family members, a lot of fellow Indians, because one vaccinated person saves, protects everybody else he or she comes in contact with. Having said that, I promised you I'll make a mention of cricket. So just very briefly, I know that we are very distracted these days, and we know that Indian team is in England, and somebody comes up with COVID, somebody is seen at some football match. Behind all that, you have a unique and unprecedented phenomenon going on. You have two Indian teams playing. A second Indian team is playing an ODI series in Sri Lanka. And for a moment, I thought this was like the old India Blues or India A, and these were unofficial ODIs. These are not unofficial ODIs. This is an official ODI series. So India today, first of all, has the depth of talent. So this deserves a little applause, because whatever BCCI has done, they've done a brilliant job. India has enough talent to field two national teams. One playing Test cricket in England and one playing ODIs in Sri Lanka. They've won the first test. But if you see the players in that team, almost anybody could be playing in the first Indian 11 also. That gives you the depth of talent. And the good thing is that this team is being managed and coached by Rahul Dravid, probably the most reassuring presence around younger talent in the country. Having said that, think of the weaknesses in the national overall Indian team. And some of that came out in the World Test Championship final. One is the lack of a fast bowling all-rounder. A fast bowling all-rounder does not have to be Ben Stokes, but somebody who can bowl as a fifth bowler usefully, maybe in an innings where 100 overs are bowled, bowl 15-20 overs and take the load off others, so the main strike bowlers remain fresh. That India did not have in the WTC final. And second, bat effectively and bat usefully, not at number 1, 2, 3, not like Ben Stokes. If you get that, that's ideal. But if not that, at least at number 7 after Rishabh Pant, or maybe exchanging places with Rishabh Pant depending on their form. So that person is now playing with the second team in Sri Lanka, and that is Hardik Pandya. So the good thing is that today I was watching the first innings when Sri Lanka batted. He bowled a bunch of overs and he looked okay. So looks like he's getting his bowling back. Similarly, one other thing that we lacked in this WTC final, and we will lack it in the England series also as we go ahead now, the rest of the series will begin, is a genuine swing bowler. Because now we have seam bowlers. We don't have so many swing bowlers. We have only one genuine, effective, experienced swing bowler. Others can swing, but experienced swing bowler. That is Bhuvneshwar Kumar. He wasn't available for the WTC final and the test series. But once again, and he's injury prone, he's come back fit now, and he's bowling in this series as well. Now, if you had inserted only these two in that team for the WTC final, the result might have been very different. So those are the areas that are lacking in Indian cricket. The good thing is that all this talent is now playing out. There is also competition for position 5 and 6 in the Indian ODI team. And there is nothing better to nurture more talent, to build more talent than competition. So India's team 1, I'm just numbering them because I'm not ranking them. Number 1 now has competition from number 2. And that is a wonderful thing.